Live from Los Angeles, it's the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, relationship and codependency expert and author, Darlene Lancer.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And musical trio, Leah Cecil, Robin Cecil, and Steve Velez. I am Mark Lejeune, and now your host, the MC, the Master of Change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Well, I have been so looking forward to this show with our guest, Darlene Lancer. It's interesting, when we first connected, she has so many topics we could have talked about. She's written so many books and so many ebooks, and one of her main thing is codependency. And then we were talking, and the latest book she came out with was on perfectionism. And I said, really, perfectionism, is that a big deal? And I heard myself asking this question, and I think she was a little taken back by my asking it. Like, yeah, of course it's a big deal. Otherwise, she probably wouldn't have written a book on it. But after I got off the phone with her, I thought, oh, wow. And I remembered a conversation where I was meeting with a potential publisher for my book, The Little Dog That Could. And they had read the book, they liked it very much, and they said, we just think you need to take out the first chapter. And I said, why? And actually, they used some not nice words to describe me. They said, anyway, I won't even say them, but they said, it makes you come across not nice, like you have issues. And I said, but everything I wrote is exactly as it happened. I was just wanting to be really clear in the book that there were so many things that happened that are so unbelievable that I wanted people to know that that I was putting things in there and being very specific about how it really was. And I wanted people to know the transformation that I had experienced. So what was, for those of you who haven't read it, what was in the first chapter that was so damning, so to speak? Things like me finding the dog and then bringing the dog home, and on the way home not wanting the dog on my pants because the pants were silk and I knew the brand name of the shoes and the pants and the jacket, and Darlene smiling at me. she's analyzing it right now. I'm sure of it. And then I describe how I bring the dog home, and right away the dog gets on my white sofa and up against my silk pillows made in China. I mean, hand-broidered in China, and all this stuff, and how then it landed on my bed, and all these things that gave me problems. But not just because it was a dog, but even people. When people would come over, or kids would come over with their parents, I made their life so uncomfortable. And the interesting thing was, I later came to understand that my perfectionism around my home looking perfect and being perfectly clean and almost looking not lived in, what was really perfect, I came to understand later, was having people over and having friends. And if the house got messed up a little bit, that's okay, but not at the time. At the time, I made people uncomfortable, so much so that a lot of people didn't want to come over anymore because of my perfectionism. So that's in my book, and I thought, oh, and here I was asking Darlene, oh, is this a big issue? So the show's is titled How to Beat Perfectionism. I had the help of a dog, and of course, if you've read the book, Dorothy Donahue, and of course some friends as well. And we have Darlene here, Darlene Lancer, on the show. So when we come back, we're going to be speaking about how to beat perfectionism, and a little later on, live music here in the studio, and for the first time ever, a harp, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Marianne Williamson, Gary Anthony Williams, Sierra Campbell, and Alan Roderick Jones, on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can visit us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with Mark Legere. And Mark, you knew me at the time.
Well, I still have fun moving your pillows around, sliding things just slightly out of order.
This is true. Or your dog, or your son's dog.
Or like the dog, and then looking like, what's wrong?
On the Ralph Lauren suede pillows now that have replaced the silk pillows because of the other dog. Okay, yes, thank you for reminding me. I'm sweating again.
Right. And see, all the issues are long gone.
Well, it's called How to Beat Perfectionism. That's the title of our show because our guest is a licensed marriage and family therapist and expert author on relationships and codependency. We're so happy to have Darlene Lancer with us. Welcome, Darlene.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm going to enjoy talking about this.
Well, yes. And actually, during the break, she said something lovely. I wasn't analyzing you. What'd you say?
Oh, I could relate.
You told me a fascinating story, actually, just before the show about the earthquake.
Right. Well, you know, earthquakes are common here in California. And where I live, I sustained some damage, a lot of damage, and plaster came off the walls. And the plaster in my, where I live, was mottled. It was kind of variegated, not smooth. And when I hired a plasterer to repair it, it just didn't seem to match the rest of the wall. Mm. He kept trying to make the design match, and it didn't. And I asked him to redo it, and, you know, he couldn't. There was nothing he could do to make it better. And then finally I just realized that I had the insight that if the wall wasn't perfect, it was a reflection of how I felt about myself.
Mm.
And that that was a reflection of my imperfection.
Mm.
And as soon as I realized that, I could just accept it. And I just realized no one's going to notice this but me.
Wow.
And I just let go of it.
Wow. This sounds like what I described and what you're describing. Is this the definition of perfectionism?
Well, the definition has to do with a couple elements. First of all, it's having unrealistic standards.
Okay.
And so that means that they're not really achievable. Perfection is actually an illusion. There's no such thing as perfection. And then the next thing is that for perfectionists, when they don't achieve this illusory goal of perfection, that they feel bad about themselves.
Mm.
So, and then their behavior becomes compulsive because they can't stand to have something left undone or imperfect. And there's a lot of behavior that's dysfunctional that goes into trying to achieve this perfection, as well as it affects their mood and their how they think about themselves. And there's a lot of negative ramifications.
Their relationships and their work and career, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, so some people think that this is not a real thing, like you could just get over it, and potentially you can get over it, but it is a real thing.
Oh, indeed it is.
It's so that's a myth that it's not, but what are some of the myths around
it? It actually used to be diagnostically a disorder, but
wow,
they took it out of the DSM. So okay, there was some controversy about it. But some other myths are that people that are perfectionists believe that if they don't behave perfectly, they don't look perfect, they don't speak perfectly, that people won't like them.
Yeah.
So they project their inner self-judgment onto other people. That's what's going on. And in fact, people are be more sympathetic to you if you can be comfortable with your foibles and your flaws. And people generally feel uncomfortable around a perfectionist. So the opposite is true. And then they might believe that if they're not perfect, they won't be successful.
Mm.
And that's not true. You know, I used to be a lawyer, and there was a joke going around that it was the C students that made the most money.
Oh?
Yeah, it was the A students might become clerks to judges.
Oh, because they were so perfect at dotting the I's and crossing the T's?
So they actually got the clerkships. The B students, they were the hard workers that ended up doing all the work in law firms, but it was the C students that ran the law firm often.
Interesting.
So, or they just made a lot of money, whether or not they had a firm. So,
wow.
They were more sociable with people, so they had better people skills.
So, interesting. Well, when you mentioned that you were a lawyer, I'm trying to think because my perfectionism was about something completely different. You being a lawyer, I think it was about the perfect contract or the comma in the right place. Am I right?
Well, I mean, you have to. That's part of your work you have when you're doing a contract. You want it to be accurate.
Be perfect.
Right. But, you know, in letters, just ordinary correspondence, years ago, I mean, this was a long time ago, and I would be upset if a letter went out with, you know, had an error in it. And then after more recovery, I would just tell my secretary, well, just cross out, you know, add another, you know, digit or whatever it was in pencil or in pen. And then the, you know, secretaries would be in disbelief. They would feel like it was their work product and they didn't want to send it out.
Right. So. And they had learned from you how to make it perfect. And now all of a sudden you're changing the rules. Good for you. But it sounds like different kinds, like there are different kinds of perfectionism.
Yes, there are. And some kind is more adaptive. It's called a self-oriented perfectionist. And then there's something called the socially prescribed perfectionist. And that's more maladaptive. Those are the perfectionists that have the most angst about it, the most anxiety, the most depression, the most shame. And they're driven by fear of failure and fear of being judged. Whereas the adaptive perfectionist expects to succeed. And they're driven by their goal to achieve their goals.
Okay.
They think they will be successful.
Which ends up being like a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of.
Yes, and okay. The reverse is true for the maladaptive. They're so worried, they overcorrect, they maybe don't finish something because they're afraid it's not perfect. They double check and they worry a lot. And here's the other thing is that when the results come in, let's say you have both kinds of perfectionists and there was a mistake made. The adaptive perfectionist will consider the context. They will review it. They'll think, well, maybe, let's say it was an exam or something. Well, maybe I didn't study hard enough or I should change my approach. They might feel bad about it, but they won't beat themselves up. They will then adapt and do better next time. Whereas the maladaptive perfectionist, even if they get an A, they'll be upset that, well, the test was really too easy.
Or they didn't get the highest A.
Yeah, or they made a mistake and they got an A, but they made a mistake.
They shouldn't have made that one, right?
Right. So they will find fault even when they succeed.
Wow. So when you're saying adaptive and maladaptive, am I also hearing that adaptive perfectionism might actually serve somebody where obviously maladaptive does not, but the adaptive might serve them or?
Well, it might serve them, but they still might have some of the negative side effects of perfectionism,
okay,
which I can go into, but they will take pride in their success. So it encourages more success, like you said, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Interesting. You know, I think I'd like to hear what some of the negatives are when we come back, actually. This is fascinating from me saying, really, is this a big deal? Actually, say this before we go to break real quick. It's such a big deal that what did you say? You gave a percentage when we were talking.
Oh, I was speaking about gifted, people that are gifted.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, and I don't know why, about 85% of gifted people are perfectionists.
Well, there you go. See, I'm gifted, so of course.
It may have something to do with a personality trait of conscientiousness.
So. Interesting. Mark's trying to hold his tongue. We better break to go.
Doing everything I can.
Let's break to go. Wait a minute. Okay. Well, let's break to commercial. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about how to beat perfectionism now that we know what it is with our guest, Darlene Lancer. And then joining us in the studio in just a little bit, we're going to have live music here with Leah Cecil and with Steve Velez and Robin Cecil all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
Listen to these words. He would not be beat by forces too fierce for man, woman, or beast. As the going got tougher, his courage increased. It's a little story with a big message, a message that speaks to children of all ages. It's about believing in yourself, overcoming obstacles, and never giving up. It's been called a masterpiece, one of the finest children's books ever written, and a true children's classic. Shadow Stevens has been called Dr. Seuss for the 21st century. His big little book, The Big Galoot, is a story about bullying. Bullying has become an American epidemic, and The Big Galoot talks about it in a way that will touch the heart of a child of four and a grandfather of 104. It's the story of a little boy with size 42 hands, the biggest hands anyone has ever seen, and the kids laugh at him. Then the laughter turns mean. They mock him and trip him, and much worse. But throughout it all, Warren Galoot says, "I'm a galoot, but I have good luck. You can't get me down. I never give up." A second grader named Chandler said, "I thought it was the best funny book I have seen in my life." And we agree. Whoopi Goldberg said, "This is a great story. Bravo, Shadow." The Big Galoot is available now as an ebook exclusively on Kindle Fire on Amazon for only $3.98. We strongly urge you to get it for your children, your children's children, or as a gift to yourself. Its message speaks to all of us. Have good luck and never give up. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Big Galoot by Shadow Stevens.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Dan Millman, The Green Children, Hot Rod Fuller, and Mike Marino on our archive page at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter at Life Changes Show and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We're back. I'm Filippo sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Darlene Lancer. Mark, you were so good about holding your tongue earlier, Bet.
I still am. So I'm going to go right into asking a question because you've been obviously making us all think. But in all this look of perfectionism, I've been kind of toying with a theory because I look at content, what we listen to, what we watch, and looking at the other aspect of it. And I wonder what your thoughts are around what I've been calling commercialism, which is basically that from minute one in the television generation, at least, we are told that we're not enough unless we have these products. And that has to be a driver at some level psychologically for achieving perfection in what we wear, what we drive, how we act, etc.
Oh, yes, I agree. If you want to be cool, you have to have, if you're going to drive this car, you're going to get the girl, or if you have to have the shampoo to have the silky hair.
I wonder if so many of us would strive for perfectionism if we weren't, with those commercial influences from early on.
Well, you get into something else which has to do with the areas that people are perfectionistic and appearance and work or school. You know, in South Korea, there was a high incidence of suicide because there was so much emphasis on achieving, getting into the college and achieving, passing these exams. Mm. So the culture does play a part in it. And women, with the emphasis of thinness, are three times more likely to be anorexic than men. So perfectionism can lead to anorexia as well as suicide. So there's some serious side effects.
Mm-hmm. Actually, before we get into what creates perfectionism, which you've just touched on, I want to go back to something that you said during the break, that we had talked about two kinds of perfectionism, but then you said there was another.
Yes, and that's other-oriented. So the ones I described are more focused on how they perform themselves and are self-critical. But the other-oriented perfectionist is more focused on criticizing other people who aren't perfect.
Wow.
And finding fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
what does that mean? They still hate themselves.
Well, underneath,
yeah.
It's just projection, you know. But outwardly, they're finding fault with everybody else. Mm. I know of, for instance, one couple. The husband was overweight, but that was never an issue. He was always criticizing his wife for being like 15 pounds overweight.
Wow.
You know.
Interesting.
So he wasn't so focused on himself. Narcissists often are other-oriented perfectionists. Not all narcissists are perfectionists, but those that are can be extremely difficult to live with. They find fault constantly with their partners.
I feel like I would just love to delve in all of this, and you do this in your books and in your e-books as well, and actually in your blog. So those who are interested could go to whatiscodependency.com, and there are so many blogs that are dealing with this particular topic. As a matter of fact, the one particular e-book that we're focused on today is I'm Not Perfect, I'm Only Human, How to Beat Perfection. I didn't do that perfectly, did I now? So where does perfectionism come from?
Well, some research is showing that there is an inherited quality, inherited factor. I just made a blooper.
We're doing good today.
Higher in girls.
Oh, wow.
Higher in girls mm-hmm. than boys, especially the negative perfectionism. So they did that with twin studies. So I don't know if both twins were in our culture where we emphasize appearance. Mm. So that would be interesting.
Which goes back to what Mark was
exactly.
saying. Exactly.
Right. But parents play a big role. So if you have a parent that's perfectionistic, aside from inheriting that, they provide role models. They might have exceedingly high standards. You mean you got a B, why didn't you get an A,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then they can be very critical of their... This is a key factor in causing negative perfectionism. So parental criticism or overly controlling. You have to do it my way. They are very rigid. There's only one way to do it. Those are some of the traits of perfectionists, can be very black and white thinking and rigid.
I can't imagine. It seems so hard to be a parent. I have so much compassion for parents. Even if you were saying that if a parent praises a child, like they say you're gifted, then what?
Well, it depends on, you know, the rest of how the parent is teaching what they're teaching their child. But in some cases, it can make a child feel like they're special and now they have to live up to some expectation.
Mm, right.
And in their mind, that maybe they have to be like a superhero, especially if a young child is told this. They don't really understand what that means, if they're told they're a genius or they're gifted. And so in their adult life, they may feel like they're never really measuring up to their full potential.
What they thought it meant as a child.
Yeah, right.
Kind of thing.
That
they thought their parents meant.
Discover something or make $1 million or whatever.
Or I'm going to fly one of these days.
Be an astronaut.
I'm understanding for most people this doesn't feel good.
That's true. It causes a lot of anxiety, you know, and then worrying. Did I make a mistake? You leave the office maybe and you think, well, did I make a mistake? Having to go back on the weekend to correct your work.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of double checking. I know when I was when I was a lawyer and I was doing contracts for American Broadcasting Company, and there was someone in our department who took so long to do a contract, and everything was highlighted in like 6 different color pens and marking, and he'd stay late at the office, but he never produced very much.
Wow.
His work was very good, but there was not much product.
Wow.
So people who are perfectionistic are often risk averse because they're afraid of failing. They don't want to try new things. They want to stay in the safe zone. or they might quit, because Toscanini was a very famous perfectionist. And
the violinist and composer, actually.
The conductor. And he could hear, he was so gifted, he could hear like every note that every violinist was playing. And if it wasn't perfect, he would rehearse and rehearse. And there's stories of how he would cancel performance if it wasn't perfect.
Wow.
So.
So we can't help Toscanini. But how can we help everybody else? He's long dead, for those who don't know. But how can we help everybody else?
Well, the first thing I tell people is just make a pie chart and of different areas in your life where you're perfectionistic. Maybe it's in your appearance of yourself or how your home is or your work. Or sometimes I see women that are perfectionistic in their parenting as mothers. And see how much of the pie it takes up. Is it just 50% or is it 97%?
Mm.
When you work out, when you parent, when you, go to work, when you clean your home, how much of your life is controlled by this?
Wow.
Because it is a compulsion.
Sometimes they're not aware. But you know, Darlene, as you're saying this, I'm picturing some people needing to make the perfect circle and having the exact measurement. No, I mean, we're laughing, but it's true.
Yeah, with a ruler, yeah, and a compass.
The compass, I know.
Do you know anyone
yes.
like that? Yes. Just curious.
I do. Okay. And how big is the pie supposed to be? Yeah. Okay, go on. All right, so what else?
Just ask people, you know, you have to do some self-reflection, and my book has a lot of exercises to help you with this. I'd say keep a journal, number one, and try to evaluate what are your values. Are you, you mentioned you want to be socialized, but your house was so neat, your friends didn't want to come over.
Right.
So
nice. What are your values?
Yeah.
Nice.
And do like an analysis. Are your needs getting met? Are your values consistent with your behavior? And what are your standards? Write them down, because healthy standards are realistic. They're attainable. They're flexible. You don't want to expect yourself to do a 5K when you haven't been running for 5 years. You're out of condition.
So somebody might enter a 5K without having run for many years just so that they could feel bad about themselves for not even being able to finish it or something, right?
Well, yeah. They'll feel bad that they don't measure up to what they used to do.
Mm.
And then they injure themselves.
Mm.
Or women could have surgeries on their bodies over and over to perfect themselves.
Quote, unquote, perfect themselves.
Yes.
Right.
And because it's never good enough. And then I mentioned like black and white thinking, rigid thinking. Start to, and a journal will help this, and I have a lot of exercises in this too. These are called cognitive distortions.
Okay.
So you're always maybe projecting the negative, having double standards for yourself. You expect yourself to be perfect, but you'd be much more forgiving of someone else, unless you're another oriented perfectionist. Are you thinking very inflexible or rigid? Do you overgeneralize, like, oh, I didn't get an A on this test, I'm going to fail the course? You know, that's typical. Catastrophizing.
Yes.
Like if I don't get a good grade in this course, I will never be able to get into college.
Mm.
So you're the worst case
scenario. I'll never have a family.
Wow, Filippo, you must really be gifted.
No, this isn't me. That part's not me, I don't think. No, I don't think this is me.
So then I can't go into all of these steps. There's a lot of chapters, but
and they're in I'm Not Perfect, I'm Only Human, that ebook, right?
Yeah.
How to Be Perfectionism. But actually, go ahead and name a couple, but I'm actually sensing that so many of the other books add information to this topic too, even though they're seemingly unrelated, like 10 Steps to Self-Esteem.
That's right.
It's right?
Precisely. And Conquering Shame. Because shame
conquering
is...
Conquering shame.
Shame is...
Right.
That's the underbelly of perfectionism. It's like if I'm perfect, then I don't feel inferior. I don't feel... not enough. I don't feel inadequate. I don't feel unattractive. Those are all other ways I won't be liked. Those are another way of saying that I don't feel good about myself, that I feel worthless. Well, I don't feel value. I don't feel like I have value just being human. It's about being human.
Right.
And accepting yourself.
I'm not perfect. I'm only human. I am loving this conversation with our guest, Darlene Lancer. We'll have a few more minutes with her when we come back. And also, Dorothy Donahue will be joining us in the studio for her Ask Dorothy segment and live music here in the studio with our musical guests, Leah Cecil, Steve Velez, and Robin Cecil, all on the Life Changes Show when we come back after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
You are listening to The Life Changes Show, recorded live from Studio NoHo. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as Mariel Hemingway, Shadow Stevens, Barbara Morrison, and Kyle Cease at our archive on our website at lifechangesshow.com. You can also follow us online via Twitter, at Life Changes Show, and Facebook at The Life Changes Show.
We are back. And if you like what you're hearing, and if you've liked any of what you've heard over the past 10 years with us interviewing some fascinating guests and introducing some great musicians, during that time, many of you have let us know how much you have appreciated what we do. And we appreciate that. Some of you have even asked us if you could help support the show. And we've never asked for anything. But now we are set up to do some very exciting things, and we are ready to accept your support. For the past year or so, we have been developing a new Life Changes show. We call it Life Changes Live. This new format is truly a show like you've never felt before, and it's mixed reality. Mixed reality combines all the elements of our radio show. We'll still have authentic, life-changing guests and live musical performances, but the new show introduces new segments and will be filmed in front of a live studio audience. In fact, it will also be shot in a 360 immersive virtual reality dome with visuals and soundscapes like you've never experienced because the technology wasn't available, and it will be streamed in virtual reality all over the world. We invite you to be part of something truly groundbreaking on many levels, and we're asking for your support now in making Life Changes Live a reality. Co-create this show with us, break ground with us, and be part of something new, fun, and positively life-changing. As a thank you, we have created some exclusive rewards for our listeners who become our patrons. So become a Life Changes patron by going to our website at lifechangesshow.com and click on the Patreon link on our website. We have Patreon support from $1 on up. So thank you to all you listeners, and thank you to Darlene Lancer, who's provided such great information about how to beat perfectionism. And now, Darlene, you actually shared some fun things that we could do.
Right, like making mistakes. That might be not much fun for a perfectionist, but, you have to just bite the bullet and maybe leave the bed unmade a couple days a week. Send an email with a mistake in it or, just see where you can intentionally make mistakes.
I like that. I actually said to a client once who was a perfectionist and a very clean person, and it was getting in the way of his work. I said, do you have Legos? And he said, no. I said, can you get a box of Legos? He said, yes. What do you want me to make? I said, I don't want you to make anything. I want you to throw them on the floor in your living room. And then he said, and then what? And then I said, leave them there. Oh, no, I can't do that.
Right.
And he couldn't.
Yeah.
He never did.
So, you know, skip a day of exercise. But deal, let yourself experience what the feelings are when you do this, because mm-hmm. that gets to the core of it. And do some journaling about how that anxiety, and underneath the anxiety, there's deeper layers of what it means to you and what it says about you. So then, you know, try to have some fun, relax, increase your pleasure, because there's a lot of time of energy spent into trying to be perfect that's not really rewarding in the big picture.
Mm.
Maybe learn to meditate.
Mm.
Become more practicing mindfulness will really help you because you can start being aware of your negative self thoughts. I'd write down all of your, this is the first step in 10 steps to self-esteem, overcoming self-criticism. Write down all your negative self-talk. That includes shoulds every day. You have become much more aware of your inner critic and how it drives you.
And that reminds me of one of your other books, Freedom from Guilt and Blame, Finding Self-Forgiveness.
Right. You know, that people are very judgmental of themselves. And where they would forgive someone else, they'll be self-punishing for years about something they can't let go of.
Wow.
So, yes, you know, people often come to therapy because they want to change themselves, they want to perfect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the goal is to accept yourself, not to improve yourself.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with having like a thinner body or whatever it is, but where it comes from inside.
That's right. And it's not compulsive. You know, I'll share another personal story. My grandmother was obese, and my mother was always very weight conscious.
Mm.
So as a little girl, I copied that. And you know, when I started becoming a teenager, I started like weighing myself every day.
Wow.
And then I would count my calories. I got really obsessive about it. And then as an adult, I was kind of repeating this habit for a while, and I realized it was making or breaking my day. I mean, if I gained weight or didn't, it's like, it was ridiculous. And then I realized, and this is another thing you need to do, is like challenge your beliefs.
Mm.
And I realized there's overweight people are very loved and happy and well-liked, and that I could lose weight if I wanted to anytime I gave away my scale.
Oh, wow.
And I just stopped weighing myself.
Wow. That sounds like one of those to-do things.
That's
throw
right.
away your scales.
You know, so you challenge. There's a lot of information on how to challenge your standards, your beliefs, and find out where it comes from. You know, is there another point of view? You know, what would you say to somebody else, or what would they say to you?
There is a lot of information. As a matter of fact, there's a lot more information self-love meditation, for example, is another one of your ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
So many of these revolve around that, and maybe it all revolves around self-love in some way or another. But what is codependency.com is the website where you could learn more about Darlene Lancer. And also, she does one-on-ones on the phone and in person, and couple therapy as well. So you could reach her at whatiscodependency.com. Darlene, thank you so much for being a perfect guest.
Oh, thank you for being the perfect host.
Thank you so much. This has been very, very special. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Yes, we do. Dear Dorothy, this is Joanna, and I want to thank you for the help you've given me in the past. I'm in Canada for a while, and I'm doing my best to choose love every second of the day because you have shared that we have two major choices, and that they are love versus fear. However, my dear friend in Los Angeles has sent me a video that says we only have 8 years left on Earth because the people in power are extremely evil and are in the process of destroying the people and the planet. I can't get this out of my mind, and this video terrifies me. Please, please help me.
My dear friend, being terrified is choosing to live in fear, and this is not really choosing to live life to the fullest. Fear destroys those who embrace it as a way of life. Joanna, let's remember that you are always a choice, and it may be a better choice for you to not watch negative videos and to not have conversations with people who are choosing fear and insist on sharing their fears with you. It could also be a good idea to not believe that there is only evil in this world. There is so much good happening every day, and if you choose to look for it, you can and will find it. I Googled the two words, good news, and in less than 48 seconds, 6,980,000,000 sites popped up. That's 6,980,000,000. And when I Googled the words positive world news, I came up with over 7 million sites. There truly is a lot of good happening in our world. Look for it and you will find it. And let's find a way to remember and believe that with God, all things are possible. We are all divine children of God and we are the power in our world. Please join me in co-creating a world filled with peace and joy for all. I believe this is why so many awesome and amazing beings have chosen to be here on the planet at this time. Let's choose love.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
Thank you. And with that, we are ready for our musical guests, Leah Cecil, Steve Velez, and Robin Cecil, right here on the Life Changes Show, right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
The Life Changes Show is a premier radio show presented by the Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people, celebrities, corporate giants, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart, integrity, and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your lives through the Life Changes Show, lifechangesnetwork.com, and through guest appearances on other inspiring shows and events. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching, a private consultation with one of us, corporate or live event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, please email us at info@lifechangesnetwork.com.
We are back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, sitting here with Mark and, of course, our guest, Darlene Lancer. And joining us in the studio are three fine, fine musicians. We have Leah Cecil, who is a harpist and something else I'll tell you in a little bit. We also have Steve Velez, who is a cellist, a producer, and a director at the Capo Players, or Da Capo Players. And then we have Robin Cecil, who is a violinist and a live film and TV recording artist. So first of all, welcome to all three of you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you all. And Leah, we're going to be featuring you today. And I think it's interesting that of all the shows, you are here on How to Beat Perfectionism Day because you were Miss Runner-Up for Miss California in 2011 and then Miss California in 2012. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Wow, perfectionism. I bet in that line of work, you've seen it a bit, if not experienced it yourself.
I definitely have, and I grew up with it as a violinist growing up, and then as a harpist, and then getting into the Miss America organization. Yeah, there's a lot of expectation for perfectionism, or perfection, mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the ones that really want to concentrate on being perfect really lose themselves in the competition. Mm. And I think they lose their authenticity. My mother and I were talking about this earlier today. So I think it's important to think about doing your best and becoming your best self, becoming better, but not becoming perfect in comparison to the other girls in the competition.
We like the phrase, I'm perfecting. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfecting.
Oh, interesting. By the way, that was the mom. That's Robin Cecil, I didn't mention. So that's right. So mom and daughter here. And actually, mom, Robin, you taught your daughter initially?
On violin, mostly because I was a violin teacher at home, had my own private studio. And I, as my toddlers grew up, hearing the violin students coming in, and it was more like she just wanted to do what all these kids were coming in and doing.
Aww.
So we bought her a little Looney Tunes plastic Bugs Bunny violin. So, and then pretty soon I realized she by her voice, and I could tell she could carry a tune that we got her.
Oh, you sing as well?
I can carry a tune. I love singing harmonies more, but
then played
the harp as a teen, and that's where I am. It's brought me where I am today.
Yeah, so you can carry a tune. How you carry that harp, I don't know. I mean, that harp is bigger than you are in
some
more ways
squats.
Than one.
Get some good squat
it's
action.
It's definitely taller, for sure. Well, and why the harp for you?
So, I grew up playing violin, and then as a young teen, I realized I wanted to try something different, and I didn't even know harps existed until my mother told me about a harpist that was in Long Beach, Ellie Choate. She is my harp queen and my forever favorite teacher, and I just realized very quickly that it's something I could do and I really wanted to pursue.
Well, not only something you could do, actually, you won the title of Miss California doing that and many other things. As a matter of fact, are you actually, we're still doing this, you're going to play the piece that
sure.
you did during the competition?
Yes, it's called
This is exciting. Okay, yeah. And that's called Little Fountain,
Little
right?
Little Fountain by Samuel Pratt.
Okay, well, here is Leah Cecil performing her piece that she performed when she won Miss California 2012. The piece is Little Fountain, here live on the Life Changes show here at Studio NoHo. Thank you so much, Leah Cecil. That's exciting. Your website is Leah Harps, LEAHHARPS.com, which is very fitting because you're actually an ambassador for harps.
Oh,
right?
Yes, and it's a very small sister brotherhood, so it's definitely a fun little group to be a part of. They're very rare.
you know, I... I did see the Taco Bell commercial you were in, by the way. I didn't see the Glee episode yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing that. But I have to say, before we move on, you've done a lot of things, obviously, and been featured in some really special things, along with performing with Andrea Bocelli at the Dolby Theater in Hollywood, yes, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, speaking of perfectionism the Miss California pageant, you won without, quote unquote, perfect nails. Could you explain that? Because most women think that they have to have perfect nails, right, in order to be beautiful.
A lot of them can have the long, beautiful nails, but I've, you know, as a violinist and harpist, just grew up not having pretty nails. So it's just something that is part of the job description, and obviously the judges didn't care. So.
That's awesome, and there's nothing wrong with your nails. They look fine.
Thank you.
It's not what people
short.
Would think. Yeah. So that's interesting. Well, actually, Steve, you were here before, and the last time you were here, you did something very special. There was something happening in your life. Mm-hmm. People have to listen to that show because it just was special show. Well, I'll say your dad was passing and you played a special tribute. It was incredible. And then you had some other stories that we thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to share those? And here you are.
Yes.
So you have a story about an impromptu piece or change in program or something.
Well, the three of us here, Robin, Lee, and myself, we were brought to Korea to represent America for a festival, a celebration of an anniversary of a city. And it was incredible because they took care of everything for us. They brought us to the amazing restaurants, and they organized a concert, and we were under the assumption that it was for an elderly group in a nursing home. So we had a very sophisticated program. So they're walking us.
Which is an easy mistake when you so much is done in another language that is not your language,
very
right?
Very easy. Exactly. Yeah. So we're walking into the theater, and as we were walking in, going up to the stage, we realized these are not seniors. These are special needs adults. And
wow.
We Robin and I looked at each other and goes, we need to change a program. We change a program on the way up to the stage.
Within 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
Robin and I have been doing outreach concerts with the Philharmonic Society, going to schools to promote and get people excited about music. And we thought we need to bring in some of the stuff like Turkey in the Straw. And we ended up doing Beethoven, because everybody loves Beethoven. And we did Ode to Joy, and what was so incredible is they started singing along in German.
Okay, so it wasn't enough that they were so excited about all the music that we have, and that was really a reflection on Korea, how they believe in the fine arts to teach not just the mainstream public citizens who can afford tickets.
And this is South Korea.
This is South Korea, correct, in the city of Anyang, and which is our sister city of Garden Grove. And that's why Leah was Miss Garden Grove also at the time. Or no, it just finished.
Before.
Yes. And so we were asked to do this concert, like Steve was saying. And and while we were playing our pieces for them, which were very simplified, we had a more sophisticated program for them, but we realized we needed to change things. And they were so joyful. And it was a reflection of Korea's belief in the culture arts. So when we told them we were going to play Beethoven, Ode to Joy, they were so excited.
Oh.
And while we were playing, you could hear the audience singing along.
Wow.
And I was thinking, oh my gosh, it was just such a beautiful thing to hear special needs people that believed in music and loved music, was taught music, and they were singing, not in Korean, in German.
In German.
And we asked our guide afterwards, and I said, were they singing this in German? They said, well, of course.
Of course, it was written in German. Of course.
And it was just such an experience. Wonderful.
Well, so we're going to not only hear the piece, but you're all going to sing it in German as well, right?
Of course. Like Americans. No, not exactly.
Okay. Well, here are Leah Cecil, Steve Velez, and Robin Cecil performing Beethoven's Ode to Joy live on the Life Changes Show here at Studio Now. was beautiful. Thank you so much, Leah Cecil, Steve Velez, and Robin Cecil. And Robin, it's interesting to hear you play, actually all of you, but Robin, I know that you're playing classical and we expect that from a violin, but you've accompanied Reba McEntire, Elton John. I mean, normally people don't think that's what a violin is going to sound like. And by the way, you have chickens, right? I don't know. I'm just... and you have chickens.
Wow, you went deep into the internet for that one.
And Steve, actually, you too. I don't know. Can we say? Because I know you've worked with Korn. You've been on the Tonight Show, and you've done the Pepsi commercial and the MTV thing and the Frasier and the West Wing. And can we say what the latest thing? We can't say. Can we? You worked with him before, so you can say.
Yes, I've worked with Kanye West at the Hollywood Bowl, yeah. And there's a good chance that they're going to be using me again for another very exciting project, and stay tuned.
Well, so Steve is the director of the Da Capo Players, and if you want to learn more about them or him or even Robin, you go to dacapoplayers.com. That's DACAPO. Players.com. And actually, we have one more story and one more piece. This is actually also in Korea. We're still in Korea. Okay. And then what happened here?
Yeah, so we were brought to Korea through the Garden Grove Sister City Association. Mm-hmm. And one of the big events that we were brought to was the big 40th anniversary celebration, where thousands of people were out at this outdoor amphitheater. And it was something we definitely weren't expecting. We thought maybe a couple thousand, but it was just the crowd went on and on and on. Mm. And we thought it was really important. Yes, we did come out and perform one of our own American style pieces, but we wanted to really give true homage to the culture of South Korea and perform one of their folk songs.
Nice.
So the song The Hills of Arirang is a folk song that could be considered their national anthem.
But you didn't know this at the time, right?
So we didn't know how important it was to them. We knew it was a nice song.
So you just went on the internet, picked a song, which like, this is a nice one, we could do it.
Sure.
And then you get there and you perform it.
Yeah.
And what happens?
And we played about three verses of it. And instantly the first, you know, I was doing a little intro, and you could hear in the audience people going, oh, you can hear audible gasps. And by the time we got to, you know, the second verse, they're clapping along with the beat. And then the third verse, they're all singing in unison.
In German?
In Korean this time.
Oh, okay.
but it was just, it just gave me chills. I had to go back to concentrating to playing because we were so taken back.
Wow.
And these thousands, I mean, it could have been 10,000 people out there. And they were just all singing along. You can hear the video, actually, it's on my website, but you can hear them gasping at the beginning and then just, you know, some of the people around the camera were singing along, but it was that times 100, you know.
I didn't see that. I'm going to have to go to your website and see
but
that.
But it was a great moment.
But we'll get to have a moment like that here right now.
Sure.
It's called The Hills of Arirang.
Correct.
Am I saying that right?
Yes,
Arirang. No, I'm not saying it wrong.
Yeah, Arirang.
Okay.
You're
all right.
Wrong.
Here is Leah Cecil, Steve Velez, Robin Cecil performing The Hills of Arirang live on the Life Changes show here on Studio NoHo. Thank you. That was so special. Thank you so much. Wow, between the story and that, and I could see where it could be touching to them. It was touching just feeling that. And that's the first time. Actually, it's not the first time we've had a harp. We've had a smaller harp in before. But
first full-size harp.
First full-size sure. harp. But that's the first time we've ever had a Korean piece.
That's true.
As far as I know. So anyway, so thank you for being here. How special is that? Leah Cecil, Steve Velez, and Robin Cecil, thank you so much.
Thank you thank you for having us.
Being here.
What a pleasure. And again, once again, thank you, Darlene Lancer, for being here and for all the information
you shared.
Well, with that, a big thank you to Brent Hahn, our technical director here at Studio NoHo, for making us all sound so great.
Thank you, Brent.
And on behalf of our executive purpose.
Her too.
On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Donahue, our producer, Mark Leger, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.